The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, Gary, what do you know?
Well, we've got so much to talk about. An extremely, extremely busy day yesterday. Of course, Turkey goes into Syria. The whatever you want to call it, war has started. Here's the president yesterday.
I will wipe out his economy if that happens. I've already done it once with Pastor Brunson. I'm sure that he, I hope that he will act rationally. But you do have to understand they've been fighting each other for many, many decades. Actually, for centuries, they've been fighting each other. They're going to be escaping to Europe. That's where they want to go. They want to go back to their homes, but Europe didn't want them from us. We could have given it to them. They could have had trials. They could have done whatever they wanted. But as usual, it's not reciprocal. You know my favorite word, reciprocal. That's all I want.
And we'll get to that here in just a couple of moments. Trade talks with China, where are they going? An impeachment compromise. I kept hearing yesterday, the administration's willing to make a compromise with Nancy Pelosi on the whole impeachment thing, where it would actually get moving. Well, yeah, what's the compromise? We want a vote, and we want subpoena power for the Republicans. Well, that's not really a compromise.
No.
Where did you get to the point that that's a compromise? So that coming up, the second whistleblower, you were just going through it with me here before we went on the air. We'll get to that. Dennis Rodman says he'll help with the NBA China feud. Let's get one of the best international negotiators in there. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Senators push for prosecution of the Kavanaugh false accusers who they know made it up. Remember, they referred the false accusers to the Justice Department. They've gone to the Justice Department and said, look, these people lied.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You need to go after them criminally for doing that. Some nasty cold weather is coming to the Midwest. I heard that between tomorrow and Saturday morning, there'll be a difference of 50 degrees here in Texas. And
yeah.
And I know as that moves across part of the upper Midwest, a lot of places we already know in the Northwest saw snow. I guess Spokane had 3 inches, their earliest snowfall ever. So because cold weather is coming earlier than ever, we know that has to be global warming and climate change. Because if it gets warm, it's climate change. If it gets cold, it's climate change. If it's just in the middle, it's climate change. If it's just right, it's climate change. If it's a little too cold, oh, wait a minute, I'm talking about the porridge now.
If it's normal, it's climate change. If it's icy, it's climate change. If it's too warm, it's climate change. Remember Lori David, she tweeted something, I think, years ago, and she said, and I think it was like in April or May, so it was in the spring, and she says, I'm having to warm my hands. It's never been this cold during this part of the year. And I'm thinking, yeah, don't say never. Never's a big word.
Well, you know, the thing is, the good thing is when you've lived in various parts of the country, you know that the weather changes drastically.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. And the favorite part of the show coming up a little bit later on. Mm. And it's going to be the favorite part of the show because I don't have to do a darn thing. I can just sit back and listen. Eric's review on the Joker.
Yeah.
And the reason is we had talked about this yesterday, and in fact you had brought it up yesterday or the day before, I can't remember when it was, probably both days, and you were talking about one of the reviewer that was saying that of the reviewers out there, the liberal reviewers, that they objected to this, and they're saying, well, this just shows the angry white men that support Trump.
Yeah. It's a parallel of the angry white men who ended up supporting Trump and ushering him into office. That was one opinion at CNN. No. We'll break it down.
The opposite, right?
It is quite the opposite, actually.
Right. Okay.
And it is painfully obvious. You know, the thing is that growing up, I wasn't a big comic book fan. I had a couple of friends along the way. I guess we all did during that time that were huge comic book fans. And we still know some adults that love the comics. And we work with one, in fact, here in the building. And he's a huge comic book fan. And that's all great and wonderful. I never was. For me, it's make a good movie and let's see the backstory. Let's see some real creativity from Hollywood. And I think they accomplished that. But this opinion that it's all about or parallels a bunch of white males, essentially, that support Trump was so far off base. I just thought to myself, when I left the movie, I thought, did you see the same movie I saw?
Well, this is going to be refreshing because usually when we do movies, it's Gary McNamara's movie review from a movie that he finally saw that's 3 years old.
Well, one of the benefits of working this shift is that if you do have time, it is rare, but it was all over the news and I wanted to see it. If you do have time, you can go during the week to a matinee. There's nobody in there. I mean, there were a total of like 6 people in that entire theater I was in. That was it. And it's great. I don't have to go to the Friday night crowds or anything else, wait in line. There was no line at all. So it was great. I can't tell you the last time I went to a movie theater. I don't know. I actually don't know the last movie I saw at a movie theater. I think it was one of the last Star Wars with my daughter. She's a huge Star Wars fan.
I can tell you the last movie I saw in a theater.
Yeah.
And it was We Are Marshall.
Oh, okay.
It's the last one I saw.
Yeah.
And I do remember the one before that. Or was it Miracle? Whichever one came out last. Because Miracle, I saw that during the day.
Right.
And I was the only person in the theater.
Mm.
And Miracle was the Miracle on Ice when that came out. And when did that come out? Like 2005, 2006?
Yeah, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. So I might have seen, the other one, it might have been We Are Marshall was after that, I believe.
Yeah, the last few experiences before this one were with my daughter. We went and saw Jurassic Park 3D. It was, I think, the 20th anniversary or something. I don't remember. But and then a couple of the Star Wars movies along the way.
I had a date for We Are Marshall, just so you know.
Really?
Yeah, I went with a woman.
A woman?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Let the rumors fly.
Yeah, exactly. It's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Busy day yesterday to jump right on it on Turkey. It was funny because I had a friend of mine listen to the show who was communicating with me and been asking me political questions, recently. Asked me the other day, said, hey, could you tell me what's going on with the whole whistleblower thing? And I know you don't have a lot of time, so could you do it quickly? And, well, no.
Yeah, no.
I can't do it quickly. And it was tonight I got a message and responded and just said somehow started, talking about the show tonight was going to be on the show. And I said, it's, going to be about Syria. And they wrote back to me. They just said, I've turned it off completely. Now, this is somebody as loyal as a Trump fan as you could possibly imagine. And they can't stand listening to him on this because he's all over the place. This yesterday, and it was funny because I said this and wrote this, and then I saw the Lindsey Graham headline last night that said this is the worst decision the president has ever made. And my comment was, this is the worst day of his presidency so far. And the worse than the actual decision is the political consequences that come with it, that this is a president whose message is completely incoherent and it has something to do with national security. Mm-hmm. And it's completely incoherent at a moment when you make a decision that starts a military operation that didn't have to happen. And when you see, and as we have said before, the things that, you know, how this all started and how he would, the populist message that he seems to be, the generic populist message that doesn't get into the specifics of this particular situation or at all touch on the fact that we are at war with Islamic radicalism is really the most upsetting thing, because it didn't seem to be anything that the president seemed to be talking about. He was completely incoherent in his messaging, talking about how the Kurds didn't help us in World War II, after he complimented them yesterday and said what good friends and what good fighters they are, and we're providing them, you know, with resources and military equipment and money, and then the day before discounted the Kurds. Well, yeah, they helped us, but we had to give them money and what. He's all over the place on this. And then when he hit they didn't help us during World War II. It's just some of the comments that he was making yesterday. You're going to have the Democrats come back to Republicans and say, see, he is unstable because this is a serious situation and he's all over the place with his messaging. He's drifting back and forth. He's not even on the topic. Yeah. It was the worst day of his presidency yesterday. I don't know where this is going to go. But the worst thing that he said, because remember, he said basically, I'm paraphrasing here, there'll be hell to pay if Turkey steps out of line. Well, then when they did it and there was a report they hit the town and that some civilians were dead, he goes, oh, that's too bad. And then when it got to the point of him realizing that, because remember, he said, we're going to push and we're going to trust Turkey and we're going to try, you know, to ensure that the ISIS prisoners are taken care of. And he basically gave up on that. Yet late yesterday afternoon, early into the evening, when he said, well, if they escape, they'll just all go back to Europe. And, you know, we were going to send them back to Europe, but Europe didn't want them. So it is what it is.
Well, there's the problem is that you had early on, hours after the decision was made and announced, you had, and I think Lindsey Graham was one of them, a number of Republicans coming out saying, this isn't how we lead. Because the fact of the matter is that the situation is, well, first of all, there's reports coming out of there from people who are there, boots on the ground, that can do nothing now. They can do nothing to help the Kurds. You've got thousands of ISIS members that are in prisons. They're being held and detained there, and it's only a matter of time before they're set free. And, oh, well, they'll just go back to Europe isn't going to cut it. You can't. Politically, I don't know, and this is the problem. The left hates him anyway. His problem isn't with the left on this.
No,
it's with the right. This is the first major problem I think he's had with the right. You can say what you will about tariffs, and the debate goes back and forth. There is very little debate, very little debate, very few defenders of this president in this regard.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the biggest defenders has been Rand Paul, and National Review pointed out, they said Rand Paul just a few years ago talking about the Kurds said they have helped so much in the defeat of ISIS in Iraq,
right?
And, you know, with us around the world, the Kurds have been such great allies of ours that the president ought to give them their own country,
right?
And now whatever. I mean, it's just it was the worst day of the presidency yesterday, and this could come back to haunt the president big time, especially when it comes to support, because his messaging is so incoherent in a very, very serious situation, which is about American security. Look, we've been through it. I've, as a talk show host, I've lived it. My whole career, my whole 30 years was the growth of Al-Qaeda. Was the growth of Al-Qaeda and the first World Trade Center bombing. And then the two embassies being bombed. And then I can't remember the ship that was hit in Yemen. The ship.
USS Cole?
The USS Cole that was attacked. And we had a government that at that time as you know, was led by a Democrat who decided to fight that war as a police action and didn't take it seriously. We ended up with the 9/11. Oh, it's not. It's all happening over there. It's not the same. It's not what it used to be. It's a completely different ball game. We know the history of Islamic radicalism. We know they don't die. We saw what happened. We called it. When Obama pulled the troops out of Iraq, we said, don't do it. You need to fight to have a presence and stay in there. Otherwise, it will come back to haunt you. It did.
Jennifer Griffin on Wednesday evening, Fox News reporter, was tweeting, had a thread about a U.S. Special Forces member there and describing it. And there's the article now at Fox News. And when you look at that, when you read her thread and the quotes from it, it puts it into very real terms that can only be described by someone who is there. And it is essentially horrific. Because imagine being in that place, you are trained to do something to help, and you can't. And having to watch it go down.
And laying out the facts that the Kurds backing off from the Turkish border because they believed that the United States was going to back them.
Right.
And so they done what the United States has wanted us to do over the last year and a half.
That's the other thing is that they were, one of the points, and that's a great point. One of the points made by that service member, her source, was we were no threat to Turkey. The Kurds were no threat to Turkey. There was never a threat in its current situation. We weren't going to be a threat, essentially, to Turkey. There was no existing threat from the Kurds to Turkey. There's no reason for Turkey to come into Syria and cross this northern line in order to wipe them out. And that's exactly what they're there to do. And that was my question all along. What do you think they're going to do, Mr. President? They're not going to come in and open a Walmart.
And then when they do, oh, this is bad. And then when he said, well, no, they're going to take care of the prisoners, that changes. Well, they're just going to go to Europe and they won't bother us at all. I mean, it was the absolute worst day of his presidency. And remember, from what we can tell, this was all just top of head. This wasn't consultation with the Pentagon or his staff. He just had the talk with the Turkish president and went, boom.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. By the way, Democrats, because we have Democrats wanting to comment, no. You don't get to comment on this because when it came to Iraq, when it came to pulling the troops out, when we said it was going to be a cluster, if that happened, that it would bring back Islamic radicalism at that, you said no, we were right.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
That system in the northwest continues to move eastward. We have heavy snow for portions of eastern Montana and central Wyoming today. Cheyenne will start to pick up a little bit of icing, and out ahead of the snow, there is this thin band of ice, and then ahead of that, the rainfall. We'll see primarily rain in the Dakotas today, but by later in the day today and into tomorrow, the snow continues to move eastward. The Dakotas, Nebraska, and portions of Colorado will pick up more of the white stuff. Out ahead of the snow is the rainfall. And for the next several days, we can expect to see potential rain and heavy rain for areas of Wisconsin, Minnesota, down through Iowa, Missouri, and into portions of Oklahoma. Out ahead of the rainfall, the Midwest and South will be dry for the next couple days as we head toward the weekend. The West is dry. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
bringing people together in common harmony. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, our Democrat friend, sorry, you don't get to join in on this discussion because when it came to the last president, President Obama, and his lie on the Iran deal, you were quiet. When it came to Benghazi, when the administration, the Obama administration, and Hillary Clinton lied about a terrorist attack on the United States and blamed it on something else. Yeah. Sorry, you defended and still defend the former Secretary of State as if nothing happened on that day. And we've heard it before. Well, she didn't break any law. Didn't matter. She lied to the American public on it and knowingly lied because the evidence was presented at that hearing that the media viewed as an exoneration of Hillary.
What that was, October 2015, somewhere
yes.
When that hearing came out. And yeah, the next few days, you saw it multiple sources. Hillary's best week ever.
Right. When the Obama administration and Susan Rice went out and lied mm-hmm. about Syria having chemical weapons.
They did so, in fact, as late as January 2017.
Yeah. Sorry, you don't get a seat at the discussion table on that because you were quiet. We're consistent across the board. We have a particular philosophy that we promote, and we don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. So, we will attack you. You don't get to do it when you play partisanship. We're not playing partisanship on this issue. This is an issue of national security to us.
Well, and it's should be a huge concern to anyone who's intellectually honest. You know, what you see here, too, is the liberal media loves to jump on it, loves to jump on Trump's mistakes. Now, in my opinion, and I haven't read every article on this and the take that that every liberal outlet has had, that would take how many years to do. But the fact of the matter is this, is that The facts in this scenario are pointing to a very bad situation for the Kurds, for the people that have been fighting with the Kurds, members of the U.S. military, and ultimately for Trump's presidency. Because, again, the Democrats, the liberal media is going to go after him anyway. That's expected. What you see here is the right going after him. The problem he has is not with his core, not with his ever loyal core. It's the people who spoke out when he first announced they were going to do a drawdown of troops. Remember, initially it was going to be all 2,200 troops.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pared it down and said, oh, no, we'll leave 1,000 or
well,
so there.
Mattis quit over that.
And then Mattis left. Because that strategy was not going to play. You know, one of the things that Bush was criticized for, still is today, with the whole Ellen thing, it's all coming up again. Oh, man. You guys need to just let it go. Seriously. Just let it go. But the whole thing, the criticism with Bush was about what? Not having an exit strategy. Not getting out. And my point in all of that, and again, I've never been commander in chief, but I know one thing. You can't put a clock on war. You can't put a clock on peace. Because it takes that presence to keep the peace after the battle. And now you've got a president who is getting the criticism saying, you're doing these knee-jerk reaction moves, and you can't do that. You mentioned earlier going into the break, you know, Erdogan, and basically just, it seems, from all accounts, it was a conversation with Erdogan. All of a sudden, there's no consulting of his top brass.
They didn't know about it.
They didn't know about it. And then boom. Here we are.
And you had members of his administration out telling reporters,
this isn't really happening, that, you know, this is actually our strategy.
Right, that we're not actually going to withdraw completely from Syria, because that was the mixed message.
Right.
Because, and we don't actually know what the commander in chief himself has actually ordered. The commander in chief is the one that makes the final decision, get out completely or whatever he decides. And we don't even know what that is.
Because in the tweet yesterday that we read, he said, in our removal of troops, you know, from, well, however, I don't have it here in front of me, but we read it on the air. But his intent was, because I said, now here's another mixed message. He's making it sound like we're taking the troops out of Syria, not just the 100 in that one area, that we're taking them all out.
Mm-hmm.
And you have had members of his administration talking to reporters going, we have no idea where this came from.
Right.
None.
Right.
No idea where this came from.
Right. And so the messaging is problematic, but the strategy is very problematic in that now you have a situation that is extremely unstable. It's only a matter of time before there's a reaction from another side, and that has to be Syria. It has to be Syria. And I don't know where else they go with this, because there's only so much Assad is going to take when Turkey crosses into his northern border.
And I know I've heard this. Well, look, the small number of troops out there wasn't going to keep Turkey from crossing. Yes, it was.
Yeah, actually it was.
Actually it was.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't. If that's what you think, just got an email on that. You're not paying attention.
Yeah, no, it was very effective.
This was a discussion that the president said, okay, we'll take them out, and you know, you can do what you wish to do as long as, well, I don't know, but he said you can cross. I don't know what qualifiers there were. The qualifiers came later on,
right,
when the criticism started coming. So I can't tell you what it was, except that the president gave the go-ahead for Turkey to do that.
Well, and keep in mind, Turkey, technically an ally, and as long as we had that presence there, that was the whole point. We didn't need a major presence there.
Right.
We were there, and Erdogan was going to stay on his side of the border, full stop. You get our permission, and guess what? We don't need to give him permission we don't need to get his blessing on anything, and we don't need to get out of the way for him to do anything. We're the United States. We're the big dog. And we control that situation, and it didn't take but a small amount of troops, that little of a presence in that region, to draw that very definitive line, which was that border.
And look, people are making arguments for the president that he isn't making. You notice that?
Yes, yes. In defense?
Right.
Yes, yeah.
He's not making that argument
that
a lot of people are... ton of people are making.
Right. No, he's not.
In fact, he's not getting into... He's using generalities. That was what was infuriating yesterday. And look, for me, what bothers me the most is I've lived this for the last 30 years. I've been paying attention to the news since the 1970s, but since I've been a talk show host, that's really when Islamic radicalism has affected the United States.
Right.
Starting with the World Trade Center bombing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then going to the bombing of the two embassies by Al-Qaeda. And then the Cole, USS Cole in Yemen. And the fact is, the United States didn't take it seriously. 9/11 happens. 9/11 happens, and what is the analysis after the United States analyzes everything? They were at war with us. We weren't at war with them. We thought that if we pulled back and just threw a few cruise missiles, I remember being a talk show host and the cruise missiles being fired after the, you know, at Al-Qaeda positions that the Clinton administration was firing that really didn't do anything. Well, we've responded to it. And I remember saying, no, you don't understand this enemy. They've already attacked us. They will eventually come to this soil. And they did.
Yes. Well, the cave interview with Osama bin Laden, what was that, 97, 98? You know, we are declaring war on the U.S. And it was clear, I think, who was that? Peter Arnett at CNN, I think, did that interview. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that they were going to attack. You had a hotel attack. You had USS Cole. You had a number of attacks along the way. And again, as you mentioned earlier, the problem was the finding, one of the key findings, in our opinion, from the 9/11 Commission was they were at war with us. We were not at war with them.
Right.
Well, this, you take this even further, because you, through the Kurds, you had at least a few thousand ISIS members in that region that were contained. And keep in mind, too, when he announced the drawdown of the 2,200 troops, or it was going to be a complete withdrawal at first, but when he first announced that, the criticism from the right was, no, that's not a good idea. But the defenders of the president were saying, no, it's a great idea. Look at the map as to the presence of ISIS then and the presence of ISIS now. Well, if you take thousands of ISIS members and they're released or they escape in this whole thing, then where's that defense?
Well, here's the president the other night. Turkey, quote, Turkey will now be responsible for all ISIS fighters in the area captured over the past 2 years. It's a quote. Well, now that he's come to the realization after 2 days that they may all be mass release or get out,
mm-hmm.
because the Kurds will be backing off from Turkey coming in. It's like, oh, whatever, they'll go to Europe. Mm-hmm. Well, that changed quick, didn't it?
Right. And what kind of agreement, exactly? What does Erdogan tell you he's going to do with thousands of members of ISIS? What's he going to do?
Who knows?
Right.
Like I said,
exactly.
From what we know, this came from a phone call.
Right.
That everybody in the administration was caught off guard by this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what? We go to Travis in Fort Worth, Texas. Travis, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I was wondering if maybe you guys would consider that this is a larger portion of the Trump peace plan for the Middle East. Let's just take a kind of a flyover real quick. You've got the southern states that have never been in any type of a unity for the state of Israel, namely Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, some of these countries that are coming together. And what happens is you've got the northern alliance with the Turkey, the Iran, the Iraq, Lebanon, that are completely
You're wasting our time. You're making an argument based on your opinion of what you think is going on and not an argument that the administration has made.
But you just said the messaging that he's giving is off. And the reason why I'm simply saying is doesn't it stand to reason that because the process is somewhat stalled, you've got Turkey wanting to spend $27 billion, according to the Jerusalem Post on September 29th. They're wanting to throw a whole building project into this. They're going to have a lot of European money to fund a lot of that. Trump is simply pulling out so that the peace that he already has as the deal of the century, don't you think it stands to reason that those countries would jump in? They would want to get on board with the peace process simply because of what it's going to open up to them by simple European markets.
I have no idea where you're going. I have no idea. We're going, when the administration tells me that, then I'll believe it. You're coming up with your own theory. Again, this is what we get with this president, where people say, this is what I believe he's doing. He's not saying that.
No, he's not. And tell me he wouldn't have members of his own administration out in full force spreading that message.
Right. People project what they believe the president is doing on something where the president has never projected that opinion.
And by the way, in any of that kind of process to your theory, there's no way you let another country just, again, invade an area that we just held. Along with the Kurds.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Hurley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
They didn't help us in the Second World War. They didn't help us with Normandy as an example. They mentioned names of different battles. They were there, but they're there to help us with their land. And that's a different thing. In addition to that, we have spent tremendous amounts of money on helping the Kurds.
What does one have to do with the other?
I have no idea. I've no idea where his mind is going on this. Nothing makes any kind of sense.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Hurley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Hurley. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Ah, yes. Well, interesting day yesterday. Look, I wish it wasn't, I wish the president hadn't done this week what he did do. There is no choice for 2020.
No.
As we've said before, with the Democrats, they're nuts. What they believe is absolutely insane. The things that they promote are pure insanity for this country. This is a president that the left will take any opportunity, even if it isn't an opportunity. They will make something up to attack this president. Now, politics is part of it, but the substance of what we're doing and for national security is the number one thing I'm concerned about. But I'm also concerned about, because of the politics of it, if this president isn't here, what national security might be under a very liberal Democratic administration. And so, look, can the president correct this? Yes. Is there any indication by his contradictory statements that change day by day on the whole Syrian situation and the fact that this is something that he came up with himself, from what we are told, after talking to the Turkish president? This was not a plan, and as we had a caller earlier, maybe this is all part of the president's peace plan. No, it's not, because nobody in the administration knew about it.
Right.
They didn't know
right.
he was going in this right. direction.
Yeah.
It just came like this, and boom, policy on the fly. And then when it doesn't work out the way that you want it to, well, then you change your complete opinion 24 hours later. That doesn't cut it.
No, it does not. And the entire thing is, again, we'll see if there is a reversal of this. I suspect there won't be. I don't know what you do. I guess you get on the horn with Erdogan and say, get out of Syria and do it now. Withdraw your troops. I mean, that's the only play if in reversing this.
Well, we had said the other day, because his first response was, well, no. If they go in and attack the Kurds, if that happens, they'll be held to pay. It seemed like he was saying, militarily speaking, because remember, our first response was to that. It was like, well, wait a minute. You've got 100 troops in there that's keeping them from coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're saying if they come in and attack the Kurds, then you're going to go full force against Turkey.
Right.
Which means, militarily speaking, which means, you know, you're taking the chance of really getting the U.S. involved in a war with a NATO ally.
Right.
I mean, and then they quickly shifted to, well, economic sanctions. But now we're to the point of Lindsey Graham stating the fact that they've really come up with a set of economic sanctions now to go after Turkey that is presidential veto proof, they believe. which means they don't believe the president will really put the economic sanctions that will really hurt Turkey and hopefully encourage them to leave. But the fact is, the president first threatening what seemed like military action if Turkey was out of line, because that was the first how it came out to both you and I, right?
Right, right.
And then it became economic sanctions. Well, the economic sanctions threat didn't stop him, did it?
No,
didn't stop him at all. And so you're at that point right now. So we have no idea. And then what is the most bizarre thing is his back and forth of complimenting the Kurds as great friends, and they fought for us hard, and and that was in response to saying, well, you know, Kurds have done all right, but you know, we gave them money and we gave them weapons. Well, yeah, because they're doing your dirty work. That's the thing that irks me the most. You're talking about people that have done the dirty work for the United States. They have implemented. Now, it may be part of what they want, but they're implementing United States policy.
Yes.
And they were doing the dirty work, and they were dying doing the dirty work for the United States. And then the fact you've got thousands of ISIS soldiers that the Kurds are guarding, and your message is, well, no, that's Turkey's responsibility now, and Turkey better do the right thing. And then 24 hours later, you're saying, well, if they all escape, they'll all just go to Europe anyway, because that's where they came from to begin with. Just bizarre.
Well, it's all over the place. It really doesn't go anywhere. The question is now, outside of the communications that have failed, what do you do?
And what's the message you're sending to Islamic radicals all over the world?
That you're willing to stand down.
You're willing to stand down. And that's the big picture. And I'm glad. I was reading National. This was the first thing that we brought up. We go, folks, this isn't about Syria. It's really not about Turkey. And it's not just about the Kurds. When you look at the big picture, it's about Islamic radicalism. And that's the thing that really has got to me, is we as a nation never seem to deal with reality. We saw it the first time, and that's why I mentioned the first World Trade Center bombing. The whatever form it comes back in, whether it's ISIS or Al-Qaeda or whatever the new Islamic radical group ends up being 10 years from now, who knows? It's not ending in my lifetime, and odds are it's not ending in your kid's lifetime. You and I said this a long, long time ago, that this is a fight for generations. But we live in a society that says, nope, it's time to leave now.
Yeah.
It's time. We've had enough. And if we stop fighting, they'll stop fighting. This really isn't about Syria. It's about the bigger picture of Islamic radicalism and the president who seemed to understand that so well with Iraq.
Well, yeah, with Iraq and with Afghanistan. I mean, if you talk
about
taking out a huge... Yes. Cell, ISIS cell in the mountains of eastern Afghanistan early in his presidency. That was a big deal in many ways, because the effect of it, effectively, well, you're destroying a huge base for ISIS in a country that was kind of if you think about it, a three-way war, right? The government of Afghanistan, the Taliban, ISIS. It was a show of power in a very effective way too, and I think to North Korea or any other would be enemy, and so he was applauded for that. It was a good move. It showed leadership skills in an area that he had not been able to prove yet.
Mm-hmm.
This does the opposite.
That's why it's so shocking.
Well, because like with tariffs, you know, we said one of the questions is going to be in the minds of the people in the Midwest, in the farm states, whether they are farming or not, their economy relies on their state economy relies heavily on farming. So for all of those that are negatively affected, not only with the higher cost of goods, but also with their local economy dragging down, do they trust, if the president gets a deal done with China, and they reestablish the trade, do they have trust in him that he won't do it again, especially when he's never going to run for office again?
Yeah.
In other words, do we want to support him or do we stay home? Or he has to reestablish that trust with that base. And keep in mind, those farm states, there are plenty of people in those farm states that have voted Democrat in the past and voted for him in 2016. That crossover is what he needs, in well, what everyone needs to get to the White House.
Right.
But the thing is, the same way with national defense here, it has to be for those, well, which would be anybody if they're being intellectually honest, those that are concerned with national defense. Well, the question is, can we trust him here in this area? Because everyone is scratching their heads on this. When we were getting some of the breaking news overnight the other night, you said, well, haven't seen anything from Lindsey Graham yet, but we will. Wait for it. And hours later, it was just, I think, maybe an hour or two after we got off the air, he made a statement. That's the problem for the president. The ones on Capitol Hill that are holding the line for him and may not agree with him on everything,
but are his biggest defenders.
But are his biggest defenders. If they question their faith in him, it becomes very problematic.
And as I said again, it's the when you look at the big picture about national security, the whole call of isolationism and bring the troops home, maybe you could sell that pre-Al-Qaeda.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's impossible to sell that to the majority of the American public that are critical thinkers. They understand that if we don't fight it over there, it will come to our shores.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, we've learned it. We learned it in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that, okay, we'll stay out of it. Well, you end up not staying out of it, do you?
Right.
You eventually end up, and now, understanding what Al-Qaeda did, then we defeated Al-Qaeda, made Al-Qaeda, almost insignificant. And what came in their vacuum after we left Iraq? ISIS.
Yep.
And what have we been doing? We've been fighting ISIS.
Well, and then ISIS took Mosul for 33 months.
Right. So we're talking about Islamic radicalism that when they find a weakness from the United States will come back extremely strong within a period of a year or two. It doesn't take them a long time to come back. That's not my opinion. History has shown us that.
Yep.
History has shown us when we say, okay, no, let's leave Iraq, everything is fine. You leave the vacuum, they fill the vacuum, and they become strong fast. And they are well-funded. And it takes a multifaceted war against them on all fronts continuously, and there is no end clock.
Nope.
That's what I have learned by history. It's not my opinion. It's not a label because you wish to call me or anybody else a neo. Well, you're a neocon. Well, what does that mean? If that means that I learn from history what the enemy is and how the enemy reacts and how quickly the enemy can rebound and understand that the enemy is based on a religious philosophy of power and control, using a religious philosophy for power and control, and they've been extremely successful worldwide in building support and raising money and arms for their cause, and they will attack the United States and have been successful in attacking the United States and our assets worldwide and continue to do so, that I have to come to the realization that the war is never going to end, and I cannot ever be of the mentality our troops belong at home, and if we weren't over there, they wouldn't be bothering us.
Right.
We're way past that isolationist philosophy.
we can't afford to have it.
And that's the fear, that's the biggest fear here, because of anyone who I thought, because of how he went in Afghanistan and in Iraq, understood that it was Donald Trump. And all of a sudden, within a couple of months, maybe a year, because we can talk about the first Syria, then the Afghanistan, then inviting the Taliban the week of 9/11, which was just completely and totally bizarre. And then this, you're like, what is in his mind?
Well, it has everyone scratching their head. The left doesn't need to even join in on this to demonstrate that he has a real problem here.
I told you, I went to all different, I'm not going to name anybody, but I went to all the different people that we have talked about. Mm-hmm. You know, all the different people, all of our colleagues in the business. Mm-hmm. And 95% of them are completely quiet on all of this. It's really amazing. They'll talk about it, but in a different concept. I saw one writer say, well, the problem is the fact that, Turkey actually shouldn't be in NATO. Okay, that's a side topic.
Right. We can have that separate discussion.
They're in all the side topics. Nobody is addressing what the president has actually said and analyzed it. Well, some have, but the majority have not. And I believe they're in shock.
I think they are, too. I think they're trying to gather, essentially, their... trying to determine that what you have to do is first determine what the president's strategy is here. Someone tell me the strategy.
We don't know. Nobody knows.
And don't make up something that he hasn't said.
Right.
I need to hear it from him.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on proposed hours of service rules. Split duty break. The off-duty break rule would allow one break of at least 30 minutes, but no more than 3 hours, which would pause your 14-hour driving window. Basically, this exception would extend your 14-hour driving window to as much as 17 hours, while it would increase your flexibility and could help you avoid speeding or rushing to get to your next customer or break location. However, you must realize that driving after coming on duty up to 17 hours earlier can be a long day. If this part of the rule would pass, make sure to avoid being pressured into a long day that you can't handle. A 17-hour day is very long to maintain sharp driving skills and attention. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to John in Chicago. John, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Gary. You guys are really batting 1,000 tonight. I've never been more impressed with your analysis. And I've never been more worried about where their administration is going. I have considered myself part of Trump's base. But I never bought into the isolationism. Unfortunately, isolationism is something that always comes with abandoning the American population. You know, it's a disposition that's there. But the fact is, you don't go from being the world's superpower to being an isolationist nation. And I think you've already covered a lot of the reasons for it, is that there are people out there across the world who resent our influence in the world, and they're going to do that even if we abandon it, if we give it up. You can't give it up. We have to stay there, because as you brought it up, you stole all my thunder, because you pretty much covered everything.
I'm sorry.
We'll be fighting here. If we don't fight them there, we will be fighting here. That's the lesson on 9/11, and we can't afford to lose sight of that. And there is so much going in the 2020 election. There's so much at stake. You know, it just it discourages me.
Well, you know, I'm always hopeful.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
But you make a great point, though. You make a great point about isolationism. The concept of isolationism is you're butting yourself in. You're butting into different countries, foreign policy.
Right.
And it really has no direct relation towards you. This does.
This does.
This does.
Companion for trolls, shut-ins, and ne'er-do-wells. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Check out our podcast, RedEyeRadioShow.com. We podcast the show every day. Also, check out The Extra Mile, sitting down with trucking industry experts about a number of things. Regulatory items like ELDs. There is another deadline coming up in December. You want to know about that one? If you don't already, and also the NPRM Notice of Proposed Rulemaking by the FMCSA on Hours of Service. Where is that going? You can find all this out at RedEyeRadioShow.com. Check out the Extra Mile podcast.
A former CIA, by the way, we'll go to your calls and comments on Syria and everything else. There's just a ton of other stories out there that we want to make sure that we also hit. Here, I keep thinking it's Friday. It's only Thursday, but I don't know why I'm thinking it's Friday. Can I take off tomorrow? If I think it's Friday, can I take off and you can do the show?
Why not?
A former CIA officer who blew the whistle on the use of waterboarding against Middle Eastern detainees claimed the individual in the Trump-Ukraine case is not a real whistleblower. The individual also should not have his identity hidden by Democratic lawmakers and is getting very different media coverage than did his own case, John Kirik, who I may not be pronouncing it right, told Tucker Carlson on Wednesday night, "I don't think this is a whistleblower, not at all. I think this is an anonymous source for the Democratic staff in the House of Representatives." Kiriku, hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. I don't think I am, though, who was imprisoned in a Pennsylvania federal facility for several months after his whistleblower case. Claimed he was treated much more harshly than the current whistleblower. This person is not an undercover CIA operative. You cannot hide this person's name or identity just to save him from embarrassment or the trouble of being recognized because it's just not appropriate. If this is a whistleblower, he needs to come forward in public, testify in open session, and blow that whistle. Because really, Why does the whistleblower law exist? Does it exist so you can break the law, or does the Whistleblower Act only exist, for example, in any department, so you don't lose your job if you let the proper people know that there's wrongdoing in your department?
Right. Yeah.
That's all it's about.
It's about that cover.
Right.
That protection.
It's about getting the protection. It doesn't give you anonymity, permanent anonymity, when it comes to testifying against somebody. It's there so you don't lose your job and you don't lose your benefits.
Right.
And you can testify to wrongdoing. You can find an avenue inside of that department.
Yes. Yep. And it is different with other departments in terms of the procedure. With other departments, you actually can go to a member of Congress first in order to get some cover and file the complaint, because you're going to file it against someone who is, well, a boss, one of your bosses in that department that you serve in. Well, the CIA is very different for a reason. You can't go to Congress first for a reason. It has to go. You have to go to the internal lawyer's office, the inspector general, then, and the director then take it and determine what information this person has and what can be released.
Right. And the whistleblower ensures that the inspector general
get your story and that you're not fired.
Right.
It doesn't give you permanent anonymity and the ability to testify without anybody ever knowing who you are.
Right.
But again, that's inside the department. And he's talking about, well, I was a whistleblower because I was talking about what was going on inside of the company.
Right. And that's different.
The president is not inside of the company.
Right.
As we've stated before.
Right.
And you and I have asked the question, and I still don't get, haven't got the answer yet, as to why Republicans haven't made that known. And I think what they're waiting for is for, you know, is for Adam Schiff to say they're actually going to have them testify. Mm. And then they'll probably go to a federal judge and say, look, we want to be able to get the person's name in this because the Whistleblower Act doesn't apply. And then a judge will say the Whistleblower Act doesn't apply because this is the president and it doesn't apply in this case. So, you know, the Whistleblower Act, you know, the person can still keep their job if they are found to have done no wrongdoing inside of their department, correct?
Right.
But their name gets to be known.
Yes.
You protect their job if they haven't used the Whistleblower Act in order to cover or give immunity to a crime.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yep. And then their anonymity becomes known.
Yep. You know, but in today's society, it's interesting how it has taken on, I think, the whole whistleblower thing has taken on this new meaning in society. And social media kind of helps that out based on Edward Snowden. If you look at Snowden. Well, there was an approach there, and he took the wrong one. You know, he's deemed a hero,
right?
But the fact of the matter is there is a process that should have been followed, and a number of things that should have been done in that case that still could have brought us the information without him going to the foreign press. But from that, what do you have? Well, you have this, again, the lack of respect for the process. That's the tone that is set.
You were reading me a portion of what they have from the second whistleblower, which is apparently what we thought it was, because you and I asked the question, why has it been so quiet? Because it was such hype and hoopla last weekend. The second whistleblower.
Well, I don't know if this is the second whistleblower. I'm not sure.
I thought you were telling me that. No. Oh, okay. I thought you were telling me that was the second whistleblower.
No,
okay.
No, I don't know anywhere where it says that. This is from CBS News. The whistleblower's memo about Trump's Ukraine call as described to CBS News. And in it, they point out all of these things, the memo, right? Dated July 26th, based on a conversation the whistleblower had with an unnamed White House official who listened to the call. So secondhand information. So the so-called whistleblower is taking secondhand information, putting it in a memo. After this happened, after they talked to this White House official who seemed shaken, visibly shaken, based on the phone call. Well, in the story, they actually say that the whistleblower's summary of the White House official's account of the call largely jives with the call record released by the White House.
Okay, because that I did see.
Some details are missing, but they don't make the point. Nobody is making the point in this story, at least, in this version of it, that those details that are missing change anything.
And what did somebody tweeted out yesterday? I forgot who it was on that particular comment, saying, "Well, wait a minute, what the whistleblower said bothered them so much was what was in the transcript. So maybe that White House official has some type of problem that they need to deal with."
No, that was my first question. First question is, who is the White House official?
Yes, exactly.
Well, and is the White House official the second whistleblower?
Yes. That would be my question, and at that point, because he told somebody else something that was top secret,
yes,
that he isn't supposed to transmit. Did he become the second whistleblower in order to hopefully get immunity from passing on classified information to somebody else?
Right. You know, it goes back to the whole Evelyn Farkas thing. The way she said we wanted to get out. You know, there was the dossier. We want to get this out to our friends on the Hill. you know, you have to keep in mind that as toxic as it has become here, especially the effort against this president, there are a number of people out there that are going to use any opportunity they see that they believe has any substance to it in order to try and bring him down. I want to know who this unnamed White House official is and if they are indeed the second whistleblower. It would have to be, right? Because the first whistleblower, secondhand information, and the CBS story is pointing out that it is secondhand information the whistleblower has.
Right.
This memo is coming
from,
you know, writing about a conversation that this person had with an unnamed White House official. Well, then that tells me the unnamed White House official is the second whistleblower. Has to be. I want to know who that is.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to Wesley in Tennessee about Syria. Wesley, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. I love the show. I appreciate y'all's critical thinking. I served in Afghanistan two tours during Obama's troop surge in 2009 and subsequently in 2010. And I can just say from my experience that they loved us when we were there, and they were like, okay, fine, get out. Our mission was to provide a country viewed as legitimate by its citizens, provide basic goods and services, and to deny the Taliban a safe haven within its borders. And with all these shifting policies from president to president, I mean, the Taliban just waited their time, and now I think they're back in a lot of the areas that we took over. And it feels like, you know, you have a royal flush, but, you know, you don't play it at the right moment. And I don't know what our ultimate policy is going to be for these terrorists, and I don't know if we'll ever return to a pre-9/11 position where we're feeling safe, but I know our airlines are a lot safer. I know our ports are secure. I know it's so much harder for people to turn these metal tubes into missiles and slam them into buildings, and I don't know if we need to be, as a former service member, I don't know if we need to be, you know, troops on the ground, boots up butt, you know, anymore. I think we ought to encourage these people to fight for the freedoms that they want and the liberty that they want. And should we help them to an extent? Sure, but
that's what we were doing. The 100 troops over there were assisting the Kurds. You didn't have a mass force of 10,000 boots on the ground. But when you do have boots on the ground, you definitely, if it's the United States of America and you have U.S. troops on the ground, remember, until those troops were pulled and until the president said go ahead, Turkey didn't go ahead. It was effective in keeping the status quo the way that it was.
Yeah, it did. It kind of kept the lions at bay. But is that something that we just maintain? Is that what we do now, is maintain the status quo? Look what happened before 9/11. There were ruthless dictators in charge in Iraq and in Libya, Gaddafi and Saddam. And, you know, yeah, they had their own massacres, but it worked. I mean, we didn't have... I mean, there was nuclear proliferation, threats from North Korea and Pakistan, you know, supplying all the technology. But America was relatively safe. And, I mean, is there a way, in y'all's opinion, that we can ever move back to this posture of, hey, you all maintain your own? And I don't know if America can be the world police forever. I mean, we're losing too much blood and treasure just trying to wipe everyone's chin. And I'll just hang up and listen to your calls, and I really do appreciate your show.
Okay, thanks, Wesley. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your service.
I appreciate it. And I wish the president was having the conversation you were having, Wesley.
Right.
At least with
his top brass, especially.
Right. At least we could have that discussion.
Sure.
What we got was when you pieced together all the messages was him taking contradictory opinions over the past 2 days to the point of being completely and totally incoherent. You weren't incoherent. You were bringing up points and saying, what can we do here? We, on the show the other day, we went through all the different countries where we have troops.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to pull out troops, there's a ton of countries. We went through all the different countries. Why do we have troops in Spain?
Right.
We have hundreds of thousands of troops all across the, you know, every continent. We have naval bases and massive, you know, massive aircraft carrier groups that can strike anywhere that are serviced all around the world. Why? So we can have quick response. Mm-hmm. Do we have to have boots on the ground everywhere? Of course not.
No.
Because we have the ability to have that quick response if needed. But we have them. And one of the places that if you wish to have influence to keep nothing from happening, U.S. troops and a warning from a United States president that there's hell to pay because there's U.S. troops there, works.
Yep. Yep. And it's, again, the deterrent that you're going to need. And by the way, you know, what is, when we talk about status quo, I mean, what is that? It's also keeping peace in the region. You know, that it can seem like status quo. I don't want to diminish anyone's service or you know, try and tear anything down here. But the fact of the matter is, status quo in a situation, as long as Turkey's not crossing that border, is a good thing, is it not?
I'll say one thing, the demilitarized zone.
Exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, one problem with electric vehicles. There's a headline, Tesla owners in California get a warning to charge their cars before the power goes out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
What a mess that is.
Roughly 800,000 homes without power. They shut it down because the risk of the wildfires being started by down lines. You know, my question is, how often is that going to happen? Are you going to do that every time we have high winds or they have high winds in that area? Is there a long-term fix for something like that? And I don't know. I'm just asking open-ended questions here.
What they're saying is the infrastructure is aging.
Yeah, right. Sure.
Now, I don't know if that's the truth or not. That's been some of the response that the infrastructure is aging. So
right.
they believe it's going to fall down. The lines are too close to the ground. I mean, I don't know specifically what it is.
Well, and you've seen it with past wildfires. You've seen down lines starting those fires.
Right.
And so the question is, all right, how do you fix that problem? How do you, and any project of that magnitude is going to be horrifically challenging. I can only imagine, but certainly it has to be fixed. I mean, tell me the fix isn't shutting the power off for 800,000 homes at a time during the season when you get high winds. What's next, I guess, is my question. And where is the long-term fix?
And geez. So when the windmills work at peak capacity, you can't even use the power.
No. Exactly. No, you can't.
I think, though, some of the winds are so great where they would shut down the windmills, though.
Could be the case.
Yes. Sometimes when they get to be that, it all depends though. If it's dry and you only have 30 mile an hour winds or 40 mile an hour winds, but right. that's enough to keep a fire going.
Right.
You know, windmills probably could still be running, you know, at that particular speed.
Yeah.
So, well, nothing's perfect, is it?
No. It is not. So.
All right. So where are we going with the trade negotiations?
Well, it's interesting because there's...
With China, by the way.
Right.
We're talking about China.
So there's this story out that says intellectual property rights aren't even part of the deal that they're trying to work out right now. They're not even discussing that.
Then why are they meeting? Why are they sitting down? Well, we said it. Is the whole thing, is the president worried about the economy? And is the whole thing just to get some kind of deal done?
Right.
Just get a deal done, take the tariffs off for a while, and revisit it again post-2020. We've decided to compromise and deal with each other and keep working out, blah, 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 blah. You know how they say it in politics. But you really never get to a point. But when I saw that yesterday from CNBC, I went, really? Because if the president sees that he's going to get big pushback from his base on that one. Because really, that's the major issue with China. That's it.
Yes. That's the entire reason.
And so the one thing is China's claiming one thing, the United States is claiming another. When I was reading, I think it was a CNBC article where I read that one, I hadn't seen anybody else have that in there. So I went, okay, I'll wait to see whether that is legit or not, because it's just become that way now for us, hasn't it? We don't believe anything from the first story.
Yeah, I don't know how you can trust it.
You know, and there's a story out there that the Dow futures, you know, were all over the place, and now they've come back, and it was based, the Dow futures slip in wild overnight trading after report the trade talks have stalled, and then the United States came back and said, no, they have not stalled. The initial report that hit futures came from the South China Morning Post, which said the U.S. and China made no progress in deputy-level trade talks this week. The report added that the higher-level talks with the Chinese vice premier would now only be one day, with the China delegation planning to leave Washington on Thursday instead of Friday as scheduled. The issue of forced technology transfers, which is the intellectual property, right, mm-hmm. which China refused to put on the table, was the reason the talks were at the standstill. Stock futures recovered some of those losses after the White House told CNBC that South China Post report was inaccurate. We are not aware of a change in the vice premier's travel plans at this time. A senior official said that the Chinese delegate is still scheduled to depart Friday evening, and the dinner is on for the delegation Thursday evening in D.C. However, a principal in the negotiations later told CNBC the schedule has become fluid, with Friday's session an open question. One possibility, according to the source, is that the vice minister stays in Washington to continue the negotiations, but the vice premier would leave early. Another possibility is that talks conclude on Thursday after one day of negotiations. Bloomberg News also reported overnight that the U.S. was considering an agreement to suspend next week's tariff increase in exchange for a currency pact. New York Times also reported the Trump administration is going to grant licenses for some U.S. companies to sell non-sensitive supplies to technical companies. Earlier this year, the White House had banned sales to one of the Chinese tech giants, saying that they would allow that to continue. So, again, look, if intellectual property, if the technology transfers off the table, and you and I have said this for a long time, that's the major issue with the Chinese. If that's off the table, where do you go? There is no place to go, right? unless they're going to do a side issue.
Right.
Because I think what the Chinese are doing, and you and I said this is what the president faces, the Chinese now are going to play hardball. They know it's public what our economy is to the entire world. There is no fudging.
Are they going to play hardball or basketball? Get this from Reuters, part of their coverage in one of the stories that posted a little while ago. Other flashpoints, these irritants they talk about coming up, getting in the way of the, you know, progress in the talks. Other flashpoints that have cropped up in recent days include China's swift action to cut corporate ties to the National Basketball Association over a team official's tweet in support of Hong Kong pro-democracy protesters. Way to go, NBA. But in a possible easing of tensions, the New York Times reported that the Trump administration will soon issue licenses allowing some U.S. companies to sell non-sensitive goods to China. China's top telecom equipment maker, Huawei Technologies.
I don't believe the story that the NBA flag is getting in the way of trade negotiations.
Okay.
I don't buy that at all.
I could see where a trade representative uses that as a, hey, we're not comfortable with this, when it's really not, it has nothing to do with trade.
Right. I don't see that being an issue, because that's an end. Look, they're looking for an apology from the NBA, and the NBA just can't give an apology. They can't say we're sorry. They got up to as close. If a sorry is a 10 on the meter, they got up to about an 8.
Yeah, they got as close as they're going to get.
Right, without actually having an issue, an apology, and that seems to be the big thing where China wants an apology, that you need to apologize for criticizing.
Right.
The China's reaction to the Hong Kong protest. And there's a great debate as to who's just going to hurt more, the money coming into the NBA or the flack that the Chinese government will get from the people, because apparently that's one of the biggest sports in all of China is NBA basketball.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask this question. Mm. What do the telecast bring in to the NBA from China as compared to the United States? What are the ratings in China for the NBA versus the television ratings in the United States?
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Look, the numbers for the NBA are nothing in the United States, are nothing like the NFL.
Right.
Nothing. I mean,
right.
No sport comes close to it. Now, it is above hockey.
Yeah, right.
But you're not pulling 20 shares, you know, unless you get to a playoff game, possibly, right? I mean, in a particular town where you're pulling in 20% of the audience, you know, what are you pulling in for an NBA game? I'll go look at it, but it's nothing like the NFL. But if you've got if you just have 10% of China watching the NBA, you know how much money that is?
All right, from CNBC last year, I think this goes back to last November, actually. Huh. The NBA is China's most popular sports league.
Yeah.
The NBA is the most followed sports league on social media with more than 150 million followers. Its popularity on social media has changed the way organizations like the Philadelphia 76ers, remember just the other day they had their exhibition game.
Yes.
With China.
Right.
That's where that couple was escorted out when they were shouting "Free Hong Kong." But it's changed the way they market themselves, these organizations market themselves in China. Of course it would. Wow. And then it gets back to the buying power of your audience. It's going to be a massive, massive audience with a growing buying power in the marketplace. That's what it comes down to. It comes down to those ad dollars. So I don't know where the NBA goes from here. Does the NBA have to send a representative to the White House so that they can have their sit down during the talks with China?
There it is. Dennis Rodman wants to fix the NBA's fallout with China.
Yeah. Okay.
He said Wednesday that he wants to be the NBA's ambassador to China amid the growing fallout between the league and the foreign nation.
According to the league, more than 300 million people in China play basketball. Well, okay, how do you know that? Meanwhile, the NBA is the most followed sports league on social media with more than 150 million followers.
Rodman said in a video message posted to Twitter, "Commissioner Silver, I know a thing or two about diplomacy."
Okay.
Has the NBA responded to that yet? I mean, you're going to use Rodman there?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Look, it will be interesting to see where the trade talks are going to go. Remember, the deadline is October 15th for an additional $250 billion in products that will be tariffed.
What I noticed in the CNBC story, they said that the South China Post said that Morning Post said that that intellectual, you know, the property rights, the technology transfer isn't part of the discussions. They didn't say the response to that wasn't that the administration said, no, they're not. It's part of the discussion.
Hmm.
They didn't directly refute that, which you and I have been wondering all the time. Are they going to put together just a partial deal to get this through the election? That, look, it's obvious that the growth rate, the projection, manufacturing, the factory output, as we know, is in contraction right now. Service sector isn't, but factory output is in contraction, which means we're producing fewer things than we were 6 months ago.
Right.
That I'm sure has, with everything going on with this president, that's the one thing that he needs is a good economy. And you and I have always wondered, the Chinese know, look, if there's ever a time for us to deal, it's now. President wants to throw all these tariffs on, he doesn't get reelected. That's what they're thinking. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's what they're thinking.
Yep.
We'll move on to the next administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's it.
And then if
China can likely afford to wait until November of next year.
And then if Warren comes in, we're both communist nations.
Exactly.
So there'll be much.
Huge trade deal. That will benefit nobody in the private sector. Anywhere.
It'll be a government trade deal.
We'll nationalize all the farms here in the States.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. David, Jim, and more. We'll get to your calls and comments. People still wanting to talk about the Syria situation. And I said Syria, not serious. I guess it's a serious situation. So, also a couple of calls on the whole situation in California, because I think that caught a lot of people off guard and infuriated a lot of California residents.
Yeah, I think so.
Like,
yeah.
Well, how many times is going to happen now?
Right.
You know, and there's fury out there that they believe that because the infrastructure hasn't been kept up, the companies are responsible, and therefore the government for that, because you're talking about a lot of public utilities out there. So right. They're not happy. And especially probably with the price of electricity out there, too. So,
yeah.
Just bringing that.
Yeah.
Might be something. So we will get to that. What was the other thing I wanted to... there was something else I wanted to bring up dealing with sports. It was did you hear the Atlanta Braves? Because one of the players on the other team complained about the tomahawk chop.
Right.
That they took away the foam tomahawks. You couldn't have one, apparently.
Mm.
So
too offensive?
Too offensive, yes.
Wow. Okay.
That's where we're going. Yeah.
Here is your forecast.
That system in the northwest continues to move eastward. We have heavy snow for portions of eastern Montana and central Wyoming today. Cheyenne will start to pick up a little bit of icing, and out ahead of the snow, there is this thin band of ice, and then ahead of that, the rainfall. We'll see primarily rain in the Dakotas today, but by later in the day today and into tomorrow, the snow continues to move eastward. The Dakotas, Nebraska, and portions of Colorado will pick up more of the white stuff. Out ahead of the snow is the rainfall. And for the next several days, we can expect to see potential rain and heavy rain for areas of Wisconsin, Minnesota, down through Iowa, Missouri, and into portions of Oklahoma. Out ahead of the rainfall, the Midwest and South will be dry for the next couple days as we head toward the weekend. The West is dry. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Could get very ugly very quickly. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. I was just reading, this is from National Review, the editors, and this goes back, this would be from yesterday, and the whole Syria situation. It says there are no easy answers in Syria. While the ISIS caliphate is in ruins, ISIS itself is still potent and active in both Syria and Iraq. The Syrian civil war grinds on, and the conflict between the Turks and the Kurds has festered for decades. American forces are in a perilous place, but their presence not only helps maintain momentum in the fight against ISIS, it also deters further genocidal bloodshed in northern Syria. The United States should have an exit strategy, but one that neither squanders our tactical gains against ISIS nor exposes our allies to unacceptable retribution. Trump's actions, unfortunately, raise the risk of both bad outcomes. As the Kurds reposition to confront a potential Turkish invasion, they'll invariably pull back from the fight against ISIS. And while Trump seems to believe, based on Sunday night's statement, that Turkey will now be responsible for all ISIS fighters in the area captured over the past 2 years in the wake of the defeat by the United States, the more likely outcome is a loss of control of ISIS detention camps. Now, it's interesting because the president seemed to already agree with that, okay, Turkey's not going to do it, and if they get loose, they just go to Europe, which really, I think, and it'll be interesting to see the response from a lot of Republicans on that today, because that, to me, was mind-boggling when he said that.
Yeah.
In August, the Defense Department Inspector General released a report detailing how American and allied forces were struggling to contain the ISIS insurgency, noting that ISIS had between 14,000 and 18,000 forces in the field. If Kurdish forces are fighting for their lives against a Turkish invasion, then that creates a power vacuum that ISIS can exploit, with nowhere near sufficient American forces remaining in the region to make up the difference. Moreover, there is a cost to allowing allies to become cannon fodder. It deters future alliances, and local alliances are particularly important if America hopes to combat jihadists without large-scale troop deployments. And that's the entire point that you and I were talking about earlier and talked about yesterday, especially. We said, wait a minute, they're doing our dirty work. they're in there instead of our troops being in there. Yeah, money, weapons, yes, but it's not our troops doing the dirty work. They're doing it. If you don't want your troops to be involved, and yet you still want to project your influence on defeating ISIS, you've got a surrogate doing it for you.
Well, and there's the problem. And you, what is the situation beyond this? Because Turkey comes in, it's a mess. Thousands of members of ISIS go free, escaping or released, however it's done. At some point, Assad gets involved.
Yep.
And when he does, what then?
Making matters worse, and this is what we talked about earlier, the reports out there, the news report, indicate that Kurdish forces had actually dismantled defensive fortification at American urging. We had talked about that on the border earlier on the show. Mm-hmm. Apparently hoping to defuse tensions with Turkey. We made our ally more vulnerable than abandon it to face a superior military force. It's important to take note that by shifting American forces and exposing the Kurds to attack, Trump is not in any way ending America's military involvement in Syria. Our troops will still be there. We'll just move them to enable an attack on our ally. Like I said, it is just, as we have said, the reasoning coming out, and we appreciate, by the way, I appreciate all the emails that we get, but again, what we have seen so frequently with this president is everybody seems to be projecting what they think the president is doing without the president ever saying it. And,
right, right.
And you know, and of course, we get the criticism where you're being too literal. You're being, you know, you're taking the president literally. We're just telling you what he's saying. And what he says is contradicts one day to the next, and at times makes no sense and isn't even referencing the situation in Syria. The bizarre comment on the Kurds not helping at Normandy, to me, and I was reading one article saying that just sent Republicans crazy, saying what in the hell is he talking about?
Well, there's the problem that you have in that you're not concerned really with what the left thinks about all this. You're not. It's a given. He could have made a masterful move in that situation and they would have been all over him. Doesn't matter. You're concerned with what Republicans are thinking right now, and Republicans in power right now need to have full confidence in this president as commander in chief, especially. We can talk again. We can have the debate on tariffs. We can have the debate, the back and forth, on a number of issues and how you go forward with your agenda as president. And this president has a number of defenders right now that are scratching their heads. You can't afford that.
Oh, I know. I've probably got two or three emails saying, okay, we know he's wrong. You've talked about it long enough. Now move on to another topic. And I've responded saying, I understand how tough it is. I know when it's your guy and you know he's wrong, it's tough to hear it.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to hear that.
Yeah, we understand that. On this show, we don't, there is no our guy. We've never had I've never had a guy. I've had somebody who does my bidding for me in an elective office. I don't get upset or I don't get personally offended by the actions of a politician that I don't know.
Right.
I will use critical thinking to say, is it right or is it wrong? Does it make sense? Are they communicating something to me? We don't attempt to be mind readers. I don't try to justify in my mind this is what they are saying because I have an emotional involvement with a particular politician. This is serious. It's cold-hearted analysis as to whether the person who I voted for and wish to vote for again in 2020, based on the fact that the alternative is completely and totally unacceptable, it's still cold, hard, critical thinking on what that person is telling me on this particular issue. End of story. So there is no emotion to it. as there seems to be. And I understand the politics. We play the hero game. We play the rock star game. And we understand that Donald Trump, for many people, is a rock star and can do no wrong. And we understand, we've dealt with this from the beginning of the campaign, where people will say, well, you guys are taking him too literally. Well, there's no other way we can take people. I don't read into anybody. And if I do, if a politician expects me to read between the numbers, that's on them, or read between the words. I can't. I have to take a politician literally, and we always have. This is what they've said. Yeah. I believe that's what they're saying.
Yes.
So for us, it's that simple, and we understand other people think differently, and we respect the way you think, even though we disagree with you and don't believe that you should be looking at any politician as a rock star who can do no wrong, or as a genius. None of them are geniuses. None of them.
No, it does get back down to basically the strategy, the confidence that as commander in chief he's going to have proper strategy, and yeah. That he's going to go through the process, which is to sit down with your top brass and work it out. That's something that has to be done before you announce to Erdogan or anyone else what you're going to do. Because this plays out the way many people believe it will, unless the president steps in and says and tells Erdogan, get out, which I don't expect to happen. But then again, I didn't expect this to happen in the first place. But setting that aside as a possibility, there is going to be a response. There's going to be a response from Assad. That's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Well, as we have said, somebody articulate what the president's plan is. We've had a few people, well, this is all part of the president's Middle Eastern peace plan. We said, how? Has he said that? I've gotten a few other people stating the same thing. Well, you don't understand. This is his plan. Well, yeah, I don't know, because I don't know what his plan is, because the people that work for him didn't know about this plan until this week.
Right.
And the plan has changed. And what the conclusion of the plan may be was different just a couple of days ago. And now what the president believes it will be is also different. Now, it will be interesting to see what happens today, because I think that you're going to have Lindsey Graham introduced into the Senate the severe sanctions that apparently they don't believe Trump will sign, because they Graham said that he believes that they have a presidential veto proof sanction bill that will pass the Senate and the House that will sanction Turkey severely economically. Now, the president first made an indication that if they attack the Kurds, that it would be unacceptable, and it seemed to us he was saying there would be a military response to something like that, because that's what you and I thought the other day. And then it went to, no, economically we will destroy them. And after he said that, they still went in, and from what we know, attacked the Kurdish town. So the president's response is this was bad. So I don't know where that's going at that point, but if they put through economic sanctions and the president doesn't sign it, you're sending out the message that you can do it and there will be nothing from this president. Are you not?
Yes.
I wish there could be another way I could look at that.
Right. And again, you're shaking the confidence at home from your own side. Long term. And you can't afford to do that. Politically or otherwise, you can't afford to do that.
And everybody wants to talk about what their solution to Turkey, or what Turkey, Syria is. That's not what we're discussing. We're discussing what's the president's plan, and nobody seems to know what it is. They're guessing, but the guessing is based on nothing except speculation, which is based on what? What the president has said? I dare anybody to tell me what the president's actual plan is.
Well, we need to hear him say it.
Right. And so everybody's calling up, but this is what we should do in Syria. That's not the discussion. The discussion is, what does the president plan to do on Syria?
Right.
Or not do on Syria? Hmm. And that we don't know, because his messaging, again, has been all over the place.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And it needs to be clear.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Let's go to Marty in Alexandria, Virginia. Marty, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
I hope you guys will give me about, like, 40 seconds to make a point, and if you want a dialogue, we can do so. But it's not necessarily a plan. It's a strategy, and the strategy was to destroy the caliphate, and that's been done. The president has made it clear that we, those people have been fighting for hundreds of years, and the worst thing that we've ever done was get involved with the Middle East. So that mission has been completed. Either the Kurds have to somehow hook up with Assad, because they're both enemies, are ISIS. Since Trump's been president, you haven't seen any ISIS people marching people across the beach, cutting their head off, putting them in cages and things like that. So I like the fact that he's unconventional and that his people don't know what he's doing. Those people that you're talking about have been there since we've been in the Middle East. So the president has done what he said he's going to do there. And at some point, we have to get out.
Why?
That's the bottom line.
Why?
Why? Because we should not be permanent residents in other people's places after we've committed our mission.
Okay. All right. Now, you've got your 40 seconds. Now, let's take that, for example, 66 years, 28,000 U.S. troops still in the demilitarized zone between North Korea and South Korea. Tens of thousands of troops still in Europe 74 years after World War II. The president and the Congress going back all that time, even that president has approved of that because those troops are still there. So that argument that we have to get out sometime, no, there are times when we don't. When you talk about ISIS is not defeated. We just told you. We just told you the Inspector General's report. 8,000 to 14,000 active fighters right now in Syria. That doesn't include the prisoners.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.